You know, given the daily, in fact, hourly headlines that we've been going through lately, I think we need a crash course in international trade. And I've got just the man that can give it to us. You all know Ron Kirk as the lawyer and the politician, the former Secretary of State of Texas, seven-year mayor of Dallas. He's a bridge. But also, he was President Obama's U.S. trade ambassador for 4 years. Ambassador Ron Kirk joins us right now. It's good to have you with us.
David, it's always good to be with you. Good to see you, my friend.
Good to see you. So give me a lesson here in what is the art of trade? I thought it was, naively, I thought it was all sort of tuxedos and state dinners. This is a different realm.
No. Absolutely not. And I'll tell you, sadly, the art of trade, it looks different depending on where you look. And you were kind enough to kind of go over my public service background, but the irony, it was interesting to me. I was sworn in as mayor of Dallas 6 months after something called NAFTA first went into effect, if you remember, in 95. And it has literally transformed our economic partnership with Mexico, Canada, and the United States, which your listeners just need to know, notwithstanding the allure of all these new markets, we are the largest, most successful trading relationship in the world. I believe the three countries have all equally benefited from it. But if you sit here in Dallas, and I know your listening audience is larger, know this, 1/4 of all jobs in the state of Texas are related to our trade. And much of that is because of our successful trade with Mexico and Canada. It's a little over, you know, $2 or $3 billion a day, I want to say, that goes between our three countries.
Yeah.
And the state of Texas is spectacularly, by a wide margin, the largest beneficiary of our trade relationship. But at the core of it, as much as trade has been demonized, it's fairly simple. We grow things, we make products, we produce things in excess capacity that we can consume here in the U.S. So you got to look for other markets for them. And the good thing is Made in America is still one of the most treasured brands in the world. And so we are in a competition with China, with Europe, and other countries to get our products into these new emerging markets. And the way we do that is through trade agreements. So, I mean, I know it's been demonized, but it's nothing. It's as simple as just finding more people to buy what we grow, what we make, what we produce.
It's used as a tool. I mean, arguably there are drugs flowing across the border. You don't want that. And so this is used as a tool to arrest the flow of drugs.
Well, that's being used as a prop by the current administration. Now, and I said how you see trade depends on where you sit.
Right.
Now, my wife, being from Cleveland and family all in, you know, Michigan and Ohio that are retired auto workers and steel workers, they feel aggrieved by trade. They listen to Ross Perot, who was one of the most fierce critics of trade. And so there is this duality that people believe that we have swapped getting cheaper consumer goods for the jobs going elsewhere. And it's a much more complicated argument because the sad reality is the overwhelming majority of jobs lost in the manufacturing sector have become just because we become more proficient. We move from doing it all by hand, and we move to the factory floor, and we move to automation, and then we introduce, you know, electronics and computers, and now AI. We're just more efficient. Now, that job loss is real, and that pain is real. But separate from that, in terms of what the behavior we're seeing now, as a general rule, you just don't start a trade war with your allies. If our focus and our attention should be on China and the outsized role that it's played in controlling goods that we are dependent on, and I think the legitimate and worthy cause of saying that we ought to be looking to manufacture more here, there's absolutely no reason to start a trade war with Mexico and Canada. It violates every principle of the agreements that we have with them, and that are only going to increase the cost on so much of what Texans are dependent on every day. And if your listeners take one thing away, and then I'll stop, this foolishness about these tariffs being paid by the other countries is not true. As you know, the tariffs are either paid by the businesses who import this stuff or use them, but more often than not, on groceries, consumer goods, they're going to be reflected in the increased cost of those goods and paid by families that are already now frustrated with the cost of goods and inflation.
You know, if I were a businessman, I think I'd want some consistency. If I'm going to have a flow of auto parts coming in from Mexico, I think I need to know that I'm going to have them. Otherwise, I'll make arrangements and get them someplace else. But I got to be able to count on that. Conversely, if I'm Caterpillar Tractor and I'm going to sell a bunch of, you know, heavy equipment into China or Mexico or Canada or someplace like that, I'm going to produce it and have it ready and have the logistics ready, or find other ways to do it. But the consistency is what seems to be out.
Well, for business and people who make investment, and I understand for big companies that you mentioned, Caterpillar and the auto manufacturers, I mean, you don't just go to Home Depot and go, oh, we need a bunch of new auto parts, a bunch of this. And I'm glad you said that, because the Trump administration, I think, falsely equates trade singularly through the lens of what's our trade deficit, and trade deficits are bad, when in fact many of those deficits are related to items that we need to make those Caterpillar tractors that are then sold somewhere else. And in the case of Caterpillar, since you used that, so much of their market and profitability is because they are now selling, you know, heavy equipment, not only in China, but in Latin America and Africa. Well, when we get into a trade war, those companies don't just accept that. And you saw China's already retaliated. So then that's going to make the attractiveness of U.S. goods that are now going to be subject to an additional tariff much less attractive to other competitors, say from Europe or Asia or someone else. We're not the only one in the game. And that's why you see so many economists that have commented that this is a self-inflicted shot in the rear end. My dad, who served in World War II, used to always tell my brother-in-law, he said, son, understand one thing. There ain't no such thing as friendly fire. You've been shot in the ass, just to be clear.
Well, I think what we need to do is get over this and ideally get back to something that is fairly sacrosanct. I mean, NAFTA was in place for a long time, and it was modified to a great degree under the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement, USMCA. Yeah. But the fact is, it was still there. And so this comes back to the statement, you know, I could play any game as long as I know the rules.
Well, yeah, but and the other thing, I just want to go back to the thing. Look, there are challenges with trade. Look, I'm not blind to the fact people in industries that have lost their jobs because, you know, the manufacturer making those products have moved to a lower cost country. That pain is real. And that's one of the difficulties we have with trade. The benefits of it are felt by everybody all across the world. But the companies that, for whatever reason, are left behind, that pain is very localized and diffuse. We can't dismiss that. But there are other ways to address that. And you mentioned the underlying issue. I mean, it is a concern. We have to protect our border. But for Texans that have lived, worked with our neighbors in Mexico for years, this is commercial, it is familial. There is no reason to make an enemy of our best trading partners. We have known we needed a comprehensive immigration bill for 30 years. You know, George Bush tried to do it. His own Congress rebuffed him. Obama put forward the plan, the Republican Congress. Yeah, I mean, but we need to do that. But and Trump will undoubtedly try to declare victory and say he's done it. But in the interim, if you're a farmer, if you're that business, you say looking for consistency, this is a massive headache. I mean, some of these plants require billions of dollars and years in the making. So the supply chain in North America is completely integrated because of NAFTA. Those goods move back and forth. You mentioned autos. I think somebody estimated, you know, a car quote unquote made in Detroit or wherever, might move between here and a plant in one of the Makia doors six times before it's ultimately sold. And throwing tariffs on that is going to do nothing but hurt the consumer who ultimately buys it, because they're going to be the one to pay the cost. Yeah, yeah. And there's just a more thoughtful way to go about doing this business, I think.
Yeah, it's not simple. Every time we talk to TI, they point us out, because I say, well, you're an international company. Over 80% of your revenues come from outside of the United States, except that those items that they sell outside of the United States turn around and come back, except they're inside refrigerators or automobiles or thermometers or something like that. It's a fascinating topic. And anytime you want to dust off that tuxedo and go back and hit the road and get back into trade, we'll support it.
I am happy to be back here in Dallas and enjoying my life. But I do appreciate you for trying to make some sense of what can be a really complicated issue. And I want to make it plain. We do have to secure the border. We do have to deal with the issue of drug use in this country from here and otherwise. But there are ways to do that and do that as partners. And my last point, because the relationship with China has changed, and that hasn't all been because of the United States. Under President Xi, we have a much more nationalist China that is hell-bent on maintaining what they believe is a communist government with a marginally opened economy. And that's not acceptable to us. But if we're going to compete against an economy that's got 1.5 billion people, we need every able-bodied person in North America. And we need to do that. I mean, North America is less than, if I looked it up again today, we're just barely, 500 million people with Mexico, the United States, and Canada combined. But working in partnership with them and other allies, we keep a trading system that is open, that is fair, in which partners treat each other with respect. We have, enforcement tools available to us. But you don't do that by becoming isolationist. Nothing good is going to come from that. And we are the greatest economy in the world for a reason. And it's because we believe we make the best products and goods and that we can compete with anybody if we have a level playing field. And there are ways to go about doing that. I just happen to think this is the least productive way to approach it.
Thank you for educating us. We can keep a closer eye, more learned eye on this as it plays out. Ambassador Ron Kirk, our guest today. Always good to spend some time with you, sir. Thank you very much.
Good to see you, my friend. Take care.
Thanks. For more of a conversation, go to krld.com/CEO. I'm David Johnson, News Radio 1080 KRLD.